Do you invest in ETFs? Whether you're thinking, what in the world is an ETF? Or you're looking for the next opportunity to add to your portfolio. GlobalX has you covered. From big tech to bonds and bars of gold, GlobalX offers a wide range of exchange-traded funds. Go beyond ordinary with GlobalX ETFs. Visit globalxetfs.com.au. That's globalxetfs.com.au.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10. And to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Drew Meredith, we are rolling for this 2 cents episode of the Australian Investors Podcast. We have a lot to get through today, mate. We are going to be talking crypto, I think. We've got questions sent in. We have a lot of company results. We've got you buying FANG.
Bought FANG.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
Yeah, we're recording this Friday, November 11th. And I dare say, credit to you, Drew, for buying the FANG. The FANG ETF, is that you bought?
Time in the market or timing the market?
Yeah, it's all about timing. Not really, but it was, let's just say it was fortuitous. That's my new word. Fortuitous of you to buy that yesterday after the Fed, was it the Fed, came out and inflation's not as high as expected.
Yeah, I just, I've been thinking about it for a while. I kind of was wary of buying Meta, but, you know, it's part of the FANG ETF. I think it's the GlobalX one. And I just went for it yesterday, put something like 10% of my super fund, which when I explained to my wife today, not very much money. Even 10% of my super fund.
So when you say 10%, it's bigger.
10%. 10%.
Yeah, right.
And it just happened to be perfectly timed with the NASDAQ jump 7.5% overnight. So
it just went to, it's up 5% today.
Yeah.
So that means it's now
retire early.
25% of your portfolio. If my math serves me correctly. Indeed. This is finance. We do numbers. No, so that's good. That's great. And inside the FANG ETF, you get about 10 stocks, don't you? You get the FANG stocks, but you also get a couple of Chinese stocks from memory?
Yeah, from memory, Tencent and Alibaba in there. Twitter was used to be in there.
Yeah, I think Microsoft
Twitter was removed. Yeah, Microsoft. It's just basically, you kind of view them as utility companies, yeah, almost.
But transport for the internet.
A safer proxy for the NASDAQ, maybe.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, you don't get all the huge stock-based compensation gushing tech stocks that sit in that mid-rift.
I mean, yeah, Netflix is down, 60%, which is in there. Facebook's down 40-50%. Apple's the only thing that hasn't been down. So
I think I, you know, Ren from Equity Mates, I think I bet him a six pack on Ausbiz live TV that Meta would become a $1 trillion company.
It was, wasn't it?
I don't think so.
For a little while. For a day?
Maybe. Let's have a look at it. What is it now?
Got close. Oh, it's like the biggest
296
wealth destruction in history. Yeah.
Holy macaroli. No, we don't talk about that.
Obviously, that's mark to market, not...
When you say mark to market, you mean like Mark Zuckerberg to market? Or
might go back up.
I don't... Well, yeah. I mean, it's got like zero... Didn't Jim Cramer come out and almost... Was this the stock that he was crying about? I'm serious.
Well, shouldn't laugh at
crying. No, we're not crying. Like, he was obviously... I feel so bad for people that have to do a job like us, Drew. There are so many good things about it, but there's also the whole thing. You come out and say, oh, Meta's interesting, and then it falls...
80%.
Yeah, and you think, wow, like, that's terrible, but...
65%.
Yeah, it's... Anyway, so today we've got questions that you have sent through. From now on, we're going to do a little bit of a prize. If you do send in a question and... your question is voted the funniest by Drew and I on air, you get a free pass to our Value Investor Program. That's a $499 course on the RASC education site. Teaches you everything about fundamental investing, valuation, and the like. You get one of those. So make sure you keep your name funny, and we'll give you a shout out if you win. So what have you been working on lately, other than buying FANG stocks?
other than buying FANG, just trying to keep up with what's happening in the market this week. A few
technical analysis.
Oh, you've had Origin Energy got a takeover offer. NAB reported. Crypto went crazy. It's kind of one of those consolidation weeks. And then, obviously, regular client meetings. And I put forward an idea today that it's never been a better time to invest.
Wait. You're saying, is that like a general statement? Now is the best time to invest? Or are you saying there was a particular thing that was the best thing to invest in?
I think now it's just a good time to invest.
I tend to agree. I was a bit early on that call, probably a little while ago.
3 years.
I'm like, every day is the best time to invest. What makes you think that?
Well, I had a couple of conversations with clients this week, naturally older retirees, and you get this constant comment that's the same, which is, given what's going on at the moment, should we, wait a little while until a lot of these issues are resolved? And, Ukraine, energy crisis. And the simple answer is no, there will always be enough reasons to never invest in the market. These issues will be replaced by other issues. And by the time they're all resolved, the market will be 30 or 40% higher and you'll still be thinking about it. And what tends to happen on the other side is the market will go up 10% because one of those issues will go away, like inflation did overnight. And then the response will be, it's too late now. The market's gone up 10%. Yeah. So you're still, I think I've said it every time, you look back 15 months ago, term deposits are better, bonds are investable again, equities are cheaper. Mm. If you're deploying capital, now is the perfect time.
Do you ever get those? I mean, you come across them. I see them all the bloody time. It's like those back tests that people do. They're like, these are the returns over the last 20 years. But if you just avoided these five bad days, and you're like, how would I have known that those were the five bad days? And then they go, but then there's the converse is true. If they do the same thing, and if you didn't invest on these 5 days, you wouldn't have
got zero return.
Yeah. So you've got to be in the market basically, unless you are an oracle.
You just need, like, what a lot of our time is focused on, which is what you talk about a lot, get your core right, get 80% of your portfolio invested, put that to the side, make sure that's comfortable. And then if you feel like timing, like me buying the FANG, that's not my core. That's, a 10% or a 20% kind of timing, or call it fun money, that you're playing around the edges. But if your core is there, the most returns come from compounding and being in the market in multiple asset classes.
Yeah. Do you know UDLs have been going since 1965? I did not know that. I just figured that out. That's impressive.
I'm not drinking a UDL.
Yes, Drew is not drinking a UDL. So we have stuff we've been working on my side of the fence. We had Luke Larrative on the show from Seneca Financial Solutions, talked about lithium companies. I think that's going to be really popular because it's a bit frothy at the moment. Adam Grotzinger came on, talked about his scenario for US inflation, which was quite, I would say, was quite upbeat. And this was before, obviously, we had the recent news that was recorded a few weeks ago. So that's good. We've got a lot of interviews coming up. We've got Donny Buchanan from Lake House. We've got Hayden Smith from Perla, Blair Hannon from Global X. We've got Tom King from Nanook. We've got a heap. We've got Will Bayliss as well, Martin Curry. We've got a lot coming up. So plenty of great interviews. If you do have a question for us, the easiest way to send us a question is to just jump into your podcast player after you're done listening to this. Click the thing that says ask a question, or on any of the RASC websites, ask a question. Try to make your question funny, and we'll take a look at it, and we'll tell you what we think. Obviously, we don't know your personal circumstances, so in no way can we give you personal advice through a podcast. So it's always important to speak to a financial planner like Drew or your trusted financial advisor before you act on the information. I did watch Little Nicky the other day, which is an Adam Sandler movie, and that was eye-opening. I hadn't seen that since I was about 10. So that was interesting. And other than that, the things that I found interesting this week is, why don't I kick off something that I did not give you any notice of, Drew, which is Xero. Xero came out with results yesterday.
Yep. And the CEO quit.
CEO announced that he's stepping back. He is doing it in a pretty orderly way. Ironically, how's this? His name's Steve Vamos. I pitched him to come to our event in 2 weeks in Melbourne, and it took a lot longer than it should have to get a response, but I guess now there I know why.
Should have shorted.
Shorted the event, maybe. I'm already doing that. we got a response from... So Lee Matthews is coming. I know you're like, what?
Why Lee?
Lee Matthews, AFL legend.
I'm good at bringing a red thread to things, but I'm not sure how.
I think he... I'm pretty sure Lee Matthews was the one that someone out there listening is going to be like, you got this wrong. I'm pretty sure he's the one that ran into the point post at Glen Ferry Oval and snapped the pole. So
that's a metaphor. He's
a hard fella. And he's coming. So he's coming to the event in Melbourne on December 9th. It's a Friday night. There's going to be a few cocktails flying around that night, maybe even some UDLs. And so he's going to be talking with the guys from Equity Mates live on stage at the event. Drew and I will be there. I'm dragging Drew along. We've also got the likes of Victoria Devine, Australia's biggest podcaster and just an all-around gun. We've got some stock ideas coming through the live stream as well. Everything will be live streamed, but if you are in Melbourne or if you are interstate and you want to come down for a Christmas party because you don't have one yourself, this is your opportunity. Tickets are dirt cheap at $39. There are only 250 seats or like spots though, so I apologize in advance. We've got Scott Phillips, Claude Walker will be dialing in. We've got everyone that you can think of. It's going to be fun. It's going to be heaps of fun. So that's what I've been working on. Thank heavens I'm not an event planner because that is so stressful. But mate, yeah, Zero's results, they were, I would say, they spooked everyone. And the stock fell around about, I think at one stage I looked, I think it was about 10% down. I can't remember exactly what it ended down. But people, as usual, when it comes to Zero, they're freaked out about lack of profitability. The two other things that I identified other than the CEO, one was the net additions of new subscribers in the UK in particular was weak. But we knew this. I mean, if you just look at the UK economy, there'll be a big clue about what's going on over there. And the other thing I would say is the expenses. Yeah. People were a bit like, this seems like it's a bit excessive. Like, what's your view to profitability?
Yeah. So profit matters again.
Yeah, profit matters. And yeah, that's the market.
They only lost 16 million profit, but I'm sure cash flow is much more negative.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this is a $10 billion company, which is not profitable, air quotes, you can't see them if you're listening, but not profitable. But
by choice, though.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's it. It's by choice. This is one of the few companies in Australia that can be like, yeah, we're not profitable and we're fine with that.
Yeah.
You know, whereas 90% of other companies, you would want to really seriously question that idea. I think there are only two things that really matter for Zero. The most important thing is churn.
Yeah.
How many customers are they losing? It's just like any business. How many customers are you losing? That's the first thing. That is incredibly low. And the second thing is how many customers are you adding?
Yeah.
Those are the two things that matter. If you boil it down, those are the two things that matter, because if they increase prices too fast on their customers, you know, their churn will go up. That means they have no pricing power. If they have higher prices or if their product's not good, you're not going to get customers. So the net additions is going to be lower.
I think you said three things.
Yeah, well, the other thing would be management, but because you've got to manage it to profitability. But those are the two things that principally matter on the financial statements. Everything else that you get in there is like a lot of noise.
And the challenge for them is every jurisdiction they go to, there's different tax law, right? So they have to put a lot of R&D into redesigning their back end or their systems for that new country, essentially.
Yeah.
But once they get return on that, it scales, as you can see, all of our businesses use it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, I know that like all of the businesses in here, like if I receive an invoice or there's some sort of expense or something, you all use Zero, so it all hooks up.
Yeah.
Which is super cool. But if you go from Australia, like New Zealand to Australia is not much of a difference. If you go from Australia to UK, it's not much of a difference. But if you go from the UK to US, it's completely different.
Every 50 states.
Yeah, you're going to get it's like a mixed bag, which is why Canada's really interesting. Canada's really interesting from a unit economics perspective. I think one of the comments was that basically they're probably 20% of the way through to the cloud transition to accounting compared to, say, Australia or New Zealand. Which is something that you don't think of because you've got all these huge tech stocks and whatever in North America. You think, oh, they're so sophisticated. But when it comes to this one particular thing, no. And that's why Intuit was playing catch up with QuickBooks for quite a few years.
Yeah.
So obviously I own shares. I'm conflicted as anything. So you can see that and you can hear that in the way I'm talking. I still own shares. To be honest, my valuation's between, you know, 65 and if you nudge the growth rate up a bit, it's between 65 and 80 bucks.
Still an Aussie success story.
It's an Aussie success story. That happened to just start.
Born in New Zealand.
Just happened to be born in New Zealand. It's got Australian citizenship, so.
Russell Crowe.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, mate. So it depends if he's on a good day. Yeah, so, that is it. That's Zero. NAB reported this week following Westpac and ANZ and Macquarie, which we've already covered Macquarie. We already covered ANZ. What about NAB?
It was pretty good. Is it Ross McEwen, the CEO that came in 2 or 3 years ago? They call him Mr. Clean.
Oh.
Not in a derogatory way, okay. in a positive way. That he's basically, I think he came out of rebuilding banks in Ireland following the debt crisis over there, mm-hmm. and he's all about simplification. You know, the bank got revenue was up 9%, loans were up 9%, deposits were up 13%. Everything was reasonably positive. The share price didn't do much, but I mean the challenge you've seen for the banks this year is the net interest margin. So NABs are still quite low, 1.65%.
Yep,
but majority of these lost their interest margin early this year as they're all competing for loans. And as interest rates have gone up, that margin is starting to increase. But they're all being pretty conservative and forecasting challenging period next year for property, which would be challenging for both how many more loans they can make and potentially some loans going into
impairment.
Yeah, exactly. But still no increase in impairments.
Yeah, the ugly duckling here seems to be Westpac with its results.
Yeah.
Because it kind of went backwards on most of the things like cash earnings and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
All across the board, dividends are up. NAB's dividend, its dividend was up marginally, like a few cents.
It's about 20% increase.
Yeah. 20% increase, right. Yeah. But I was comparing it to pre-GFC. It's not the same.
Still not quite pre-COVID. Still a little bit off. Yeah. Which is kind of what you want from these. If they're just going to cut it during COVID, you want them to come back slowly, not just jump back up.
And I think they were looking for an excuse to cut the dividends, to be honest. Like they're paying out so much.
Well, they'd cut dividends and raise capital and then made bumper profits.
Yeah.
It was kind of that
contradictory. What about Westpac?
Westpac, we've always preferred. We've never been holders of Westpac, and it was kind of
who owns Westpac?
Everyone else. It's like 10% of the benchmark or 7% of the benchmark. So
right.
Vanguard.
iShares
is what, not just Vanguard. Yeah, it's just a big part of the bench. I think it's growing the slowest. NAB was probably in a worse position 5 years ago, but you're getting
stuff
that.
And whatever.
Yeah. You're getting that recovery story in NAB. CBA is just the best brand. ANZ has essentially been somewhat of a basket case for the last few years. And they're buying Suncorp. And Westpac used to be number two to CBA, but NAB seems to be chasing them down.
Mm. Yeah, I think NAB might even be the second biggest bank now by market cap, if I'm not mistaken. And a business bank, right? I think a lot of them recognised a few years ago that business banking was their opportunity. Yeah, $99 billion market cap. CBA still streets ahead, though. $180 billion. So it's quite, from a market cap perspective, it's chalk and cheese.
Business earnings are up 20%. So it was a massive part of their business.
They just make it easy.
Yeah.
I think the key threat to NAB's dominance there is CBA.
Yeah.
They, there's like the challenger banks now, like Judo and all that, but it's still those two are the main game in town. That ANZ was 10 years ago. Jeez, wow.
They're falling over their feet to provide loans. Like they weren't able to provide loans for most of the boom of the last 18 months.
Yeah, there's a lot. I remember when we were chatting to a mortgage broker that he was saying it's like, 3 months.
Yeah, just to make a mortgage that you could get from Macquarie in 4 weeks.
Yeah. Anyway,
I've got a Macquarie mortgage, so that's why I mentioned Macquarie. What do you think about the property market, though? So they're all talking about the outlook for property. There's predictions of 15 to 20% fall. Are you worried about that?
But we've already seen some of that in the high end, particularly like around Sydney and places where it's much more affluent.
Yeah.
We've seen that happens because there's fewer buyers.
Or it just doesn't sell.
Yeah, that's it, because it's like the liquidity. It's like anything with less liquidity. It falls off. I was chatting to Pete Wardge, a property economist, on the other channel about a month or two ago.
Yeah.
And he was saying we've already seen it.
Yeah.
In some parts, it's 10%. We've already seen.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
I was talking to someone this week who were slightly positively geared, but they're actually starting to have problems with their tenants. So now you've got higher interest costs. You've got rents that maybe are going up if they can, but if you're narrowly making a profit or you're negatively geared and you're now becoming massively negatively geared because interest is going higher, it's starting to, there's a risk that it makes people start making kind of emotional or shorter term decisions with property and kind of capitulating into that is what we see the risk as.
Yeah, interesting. Are you ever a buyer of property? Like, do you ever invest in property, direct property?
I don't know. I think I've been taught to hate leverage, even though leverage is good. I'm just trying to pay off all of my mortgage and using it in businesses. But I think we've owned commercial property before, strata, offices, always the more passive things. I probably just hate people.
Well, lucky we're in the studio and it's soundproof.
Yeah, residential.
No one's listening, I don't think.
You get tenants. I've got a dog and a cat. I'd hate to be if I was someone else's tenant with my dog and my cat leaving hair everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Good times. Like,
imagine all the things that come up and I'd be complaining about the gutters and the the leaking tiles. And that's what I hate about. I probably hear the negative side in advice more so than the positive.
Yeah.
You know, the troubles you have with property.
Well, yeah, you don't really hear that they paid their rent for 11 of the 12 months. Do you hear that they didn't pay their rent for 1 month?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting. I think a lot of people, you know, I had Kerry Craig from JP Morgan on the Self Off Live show the other day, and he's on there talking about interest rates, inflation, blah, 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 blah. And everyone wanted to know about property in the chat, which is a fair thing because it's the biggest asset in most people's lives. But it all basically comes back to property when, pardon me, people think about macro.
Yeah.
And I think for most of us, like if you're not selling, like it's, and your debt's manageable, like you'll be fine.
Just button, you tighten your belt for a while.
Yeah, just pay it, and that's what you got to do. And there is weakness, obviously, there's weakness on the margin. But CBA did come up when they came out with their results a couple of months ago and showed like the tail of that, you know, who bought recently type thing. And sure, there were some people there, but it wasn't nearly as bad as I was expecting. I think there's a tweet on that, so you can go and check that out. I think we should get to questions, Drew, because we've been rambling for 20 minutes. But it's been good. I don't know what this... You've made a comment in our questions here saying White Lotus, and I just Googled that, and I think that's a Netflix documentary?
No, not a documentary, a comedy. Dramedy? Would you call it a dramedy?
Dramedy.
A drama comedy?
What's it on? Binge.
Yeah, White Lotus was exceptional. I think that maybe that was in lockdown last year.
89% review.
Yeah, really dark, funny...
Yeah, right. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
Definitely.
Okay, here's just a bit. I'm going to catch you completely off guard. If you were Googling a movie that you were thinking about watching tonight or whatever, which review site do you trust?
Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah? Yeah, same.
Not IMDb. Everything's positive on IMDb.
Yeah, some people go with the Google users one too, which I think's probably my second, but Rotten Tomatoes definitely for me. If you do have, if you do think that's controversial, please write into Drew. He's Twitter is dmitty13.
Yeah, I'm going to rename that. I'm sorry. So if I had to pick a movie, it'd be Eurotrip anyway.
Eurotrip. Yeah, right. Okay. That's dangerous. Okay. Okay. So Jacob Lyons has a question. Thank you, Jacob. I've got $20,000 to invest for my newborn daughter. Congratulations. Don't want to touch it until she's 18. Where and how should I invest? Jacob, just so you know, we're going to frame this question as in, we didn't get any of your personal circumstances. So we're going to say, how do you invest for kids? That's basically, or how would we invest for kids? We're going to keep it general in nature, just so you know, mate. So how would I invest in kids? For me, it's quite simple. There are some apps that are appearing now that tend to do this quite well. To be honest, I'd identify in, like how I did it for my sister, is identified which in my partner and I had the lowest tax, and open a brokerage account and invest in a diversified portfolio. That's what I did. And then you can also hold it on trust. It's not as complicated as it sounds. If you Google investing for kids, someone will have some sort of thing out there, and your broker will also have guides on that.
I'd just pocket the 20 and give it to the kid when she's 18. Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Don't give it to her.
No. I mean, with most clients, I'd usually say, well, it depends on if it's a grandparent or your daughter. A lot of the times, you might be actually better off just leaving in your offset account and maybe tracking the returns, depending on what your financial position is, and giving them a lump sum later on if you really want to. Because if your interest rate's 6%, you're saving 6% on that. But alternatively, I'd usually set up as trustee for, and something not boring, but buy an LIC or a diversified ETF with growth.
Yeah.
You've got 18 years. Don't even worry about low-risk investments. Just put it into equities.
Yep. Agreed. And
maybe FANG.
Maybe FANG. Well, no. I wouldn't do that because... Yeah, it's going to be controversial, eh? I wouldn't do that because I don't know what FANG becomes in 3 or 4 years. I like FANG as
Gang?
I like FANG as a tactical ETF. I think it's great. So I do. Full respect, Transparency, GlobalX are a sponsor of our Australian Finance podcast. But yeah, I just 5 years from now, I don't know what it is. So for me, it's more of a tactical one where I just go index diversified, really simple. Yeah. That's what I do. Then don't have to sell it. Or a lick that does the DSSP.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd be going for. And that was a great question, Jacob. We have so many questions come through like that, so thank you. Hypothetic Hull says, if I was to transfer my existing HIN-sponsored shares to a second cheaper HIN-sponsored broker, will my DRP and TFN, as in tax file number and dividend reinvestment plan, that I've made the selections for, be added in the share registry that I transfer across to? Anything else I should be aware of? Drew, you'd love technical questions like this.
I have a team. I'd say yes, because usually those things are set at the registry level, not at the HIN level. Mm. But sometimes the changing of broker and HIN can result in a kind of resetting. Yeah. So I'd always check spot check one or two holdings when I change that.
Yeah, and that's probably the way to go. Yeah. Because you don't select the share registry. The company or ETF provider checks the share picks the share registry. So I would think that it maintains. I can't remember when I did this, if it did or it didn't, because it was quite a while ago, but I'm almost certain it did.
It should.
Yeah. So that's a great question, hypothetical. It may just be a bit of a clerical thing there, because if you're transferring HIN, they're still your shares and they're still, it's just which broker is aligned through your registry. Great question. I'm sure a lot of people have done that. So Tony from Twitter said, hey, Rask, I enjoy your podcast and would like to hear your thoughts on Bapcor. Have things settled down since the chief executive, Daryl Obotomy, was abruptly sacked? Do you know much about Bapcor?
Aftermarket car parts?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, owns Burson, owns Autobahn, the business. Do you know much about it?
My Wi-Fi is...
Yeah. Your Wi-Fi, Drew's Wi-Fi is struggling live on here. So I've got to admit, Tony, I don't know a great
stocks
deal.
Stocks up 4% live.
There you go. Stocks up
4%. $3.49 going into the close.
Going into the close. There you go. That's all probably not really valuable for you, because you're going to get this in about 16 hours after we've recorded it. So, but good analysis there live on here. So with Bapcor, if I was you... looking at Bapcor, I think one of the bear cases for Bapcor is basically the rise of electric vehicles. They do this great chart in there which shows the flow of used vehicles and the average age of vehicles on the road. Obviously, an aging fleet on Australian roads is good for Bapcor. I think it's a really good business. I was really surprised when Daryl had that really kind of awkward exit. Not quite as awkward as Ian Mal's exit, but really awkward nonetheless. If I was looking at the business, probably what I would look at is the supply networks, which is the business that does exactly the same thing but for buses. And another business that I would look at, which is a smaller business, to put all three of them on your radar, is MaxiTrans or MaxiParts, listed on the ASX. It's a small cap company, but it does the same thing for trucks.
And similar to ARB?
Different in that ARB is a specialist for 4x4 accessories, but principally bull bars. So bull bars is still its jam. Whereas these businesses, like if you think about it, truck could have 20,000 parts of whatever. So these three are probably the industry leaders. There's nothing that will probably come in now.
You just question the growth rate.
Yeah, and that's probably if you think about like electric vehicles, fewer parts, that sort of thing, I think that's the concern.
Used cars have gone crazy lately, but there's no way that sustains.
These businesses often are counter-cyclical, because what happens is...
Buy less new cars,
just repair your... Like I got my old Subaru, that needs to be serviced, that needs a good old service. And that, that's...
400 parts need to be changed.
Probably bought an absolute lemon, let's be honest. The thing is, that's where the counter-cyclical elements... I think it's a really impressive business. I just think that people are questioning that growth rate. And I would compare it with the other businesses side by side. I think if now that Daryl has gone, I think if you look at it side by side, supply networks, much more stable management team, incredible business... So go and check that out. And MaxiParts, I spoke to Rob Miller from NAOS recently. With MaxiParts, slash yeah Maxi Parts, used to be known Maxi Trans. They sold their trailer business, so they don't do the trailer building, those, you know, for the tippers and all that sort of stuff and the floats. So if you look at the historical results, it looks like rubbish, but just be mindful that the economics are now a lot better for Maxi Parts. Good question. Hugh Harry Beth? How do you actually purchase bonds, Drew? Are they on an exchange such as ComSec or SelfWealth? I've been investing for around 3 years and have never really explored it. Thanks, legends. Well, thanks, Hugh Harry Beth.
That's got to be the winner this week.
Just
I don't know what it means.
Hugh Harry Beth, if you did write that question and you win the Value Investor Program Pass, please send me a message on Twitter or an email, service@rass.com.au.
Not Andrew Derrimuth.
No, Andrew Derrimuth. No one talks to him anymore.
Broad question. Few different options to add bonds to your portfolio. I've never used them, but there's a thing called an exchange traded bond.
XTB. Yep.
Exactly, XTB. You can buy them straight off the ASX. There's a website. They've just got a weird code next to them. I think it's XTB, GPT or something. You can see all them on their own website. I've never used them. Not sure about liquidity. I'm sure they're fine, but there's quite a narrow group. There's only about 50 or 60, I think, you can buy. Mm-hmm. So what we've always seen is it's difficult to get diversification, particularly in bonds. And diversification in bonds, in our view, is significantly more important because of the asymmetric return profile. So that means the only return you really get from a bond is the interest, but you can lose all your capital if it defaults. So that's asymmetric. It's only your downside is 100 and your upside is 7% or 6%, whatever it happens to be.
Oh, yeah. Ashley O'Connor podcast. I learned that recently.
It's just a word we use to sound smart and complicate things.
No, so basically, yeah, you can lose 100%, but your upside is interest.
Capped. Yep.
And so you want to be diversified. Is this simple?
More so than in equities. Away. Yeah. Because you can make obviously more return than 7% or 6%, whatever it happens to be.
Yep.
Two key options, ETFs, predominantly index tracking, Vanguard, iShares. They'll essentially buy a book of, say, a share of 600 or so bonds that track an index. That'll be government bonds, corporate bonds. So corporate or credit is something issued by Lendlease, Maya, Westpac would be considered corporate. And then there's a thing called semi-government, which is actually like state government bonds.
Yep.
I don't know why it's called semi-government. I thought it'd be called state government. But that's ETF. So they just track an index and they're all generally passive. And then depending on bonds are very broad. It goes from government bonds, corporate bonds into all kinds of credit hybrids, preference shares. That's when you get a diverse range of funds come out that can invest into all different parts of the asset class, like we talked about with Adam Grotzinger from Neuberger. And that can be, thing you would have heard of PIMCO before, Franklin Templeton, Schroders, all those big groups would have actively managed bond strategies. Not a lot on the ASX, so it's generally ETF passive and active on funds.
Yeah, I think we will have a lot more of those come to market, to be honest. As Drew just articulated, there's a whole spectrum, right? And the ETFs that he mentioned there, predominantly the IAF ETF from iShares, Core Composite Bonds, VAF, and the VACF. There is VIF, which is International Fixed Interest as well.
You're taking my notes again?
Yeah, I was just reading off your notes here. It's summarizing your question, your answer.
Owen doesn't prepare.
Yeah, so just winging it. I'm the one who sends the questions. Come on, give me a break here. Jeez, I feel like I'm in interrogation. Drew does very good notes.
What we'd usually do is have a core. If it was your first dabbling into bonds, you go and buy a Vanguard or an iShares as your core, particularly now compared to, say, 2 years ago. We've had the duration talk before.
The duration talk. It's just like, thank you, Father.
It's the dad secret men's business. And then we'd usually, complement that with allocations to different parts of the fixed income or bond market with more active exposures.
Yep. Yeah, and that's exactly right. And to be honest, this is the number one thing that I'm going to be thinking about between here and Christmas is...
Not your conference.
I'm sure everyone will be thrilled if I start talking about duration at the event. So now we're going to go from personal finance through to duration. Yeah, exactly. No, but this is the number one thing, because there's a core allocation. This is the number one thing I think that an asset allocator is thinking about right now, is what is the reset expectations for interest rates in 2023?
You look at bond yields overnight, fell 30 basis points from 4 to 3.7. That's nearly 10%.
Quick math. I'm not going to check that. But so the key thing that what Drew just said is bond yields falling, bond prices going up. So that's where you start to think, well, maybe if I've got a substantial amount in cash, do I make the switch?
We're going long duration.
Oh, you are? You are going long duration? Oh. We were just talking about off air that if we do make a prediction, we will bring in the ominous sounding music. So there we go. It's very loud, actually.
Rates will fall.
Rates.
Rates in 2023.
So really? You reckon interest rates will fall in 2023?
Yeah.
Damn, that's some...
It's pretty bold. Contrarian.
That's bold.
Hence
wait,
the
wait, Aussie rates?
Yep.
You reckon?
Yep.
You reckon that's going to... So,
could be December 20...
But yeah, right. Jeez, that's a long bow. Okay. Wait, but you...
Can I say bond yields will fall?
Yeah, well, that's obvious. But
backpedaling?
Okay. Yeah, because I was just about to just drill into this for the next 50 minutes. No, so... Well,
they've already slowed. Like, everyone was predict the day of the rate hike in November... Someone predicted a 50 basis point hike, and we only got 25.
Yeah.
No one knows what the impact of rate hikes is on the economy yet.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was chatting to Kerry from JP Asset Management, he was saying that they were predicting low threes.
Yeah.
That's it, early next year.
And we're pretty much there.
Pretty much there. Thank you. Okay. That'll be interesting, because that will stabilise volatility in the market. Investors will come running back.
And if our currency rallies too quickly and, you know, it becomes difficult for exporters again, we'll have to cut rates.
Yep. Interesting. Okay. Great.
That was
quite the one. Oh, here we go. We've got Professor Eugene Fammer is writing into us. And by the way, Fam's academic. You can look it up. Hi, Owen. Just to me, geez, pretty much wrong. Super thoughtful and helpful podcast. No worries. I have heard you mention the VanEck ETF ASX QUAL, QUAL. Do you think it will continue to outperform the MSCI World Benchmark? Or is this just the factor that has been in favor recently? In brackets, quality looks like it underperformed pre-GFC. Close brackets. And in addition, what do you think of VanEck's newer related ETF, the Quality Small Companies ETF, ASX QSML. Have you looked at QSML?
I did last night.
Yeah, I haven't actually looked at it that closely, I'm afraid. But in terms of the QOL factor, I think the QOL factor is a really interesting one. There is a great white paper, Eugene Fammer, given the name, you'll appreciate this, that you can download from the VanEck website, which shows you the types of indicative environments where quality is outperformed versus other factors. The quality factor, for those of you that are playing along at home, is basically a factor. It's like the variables of a business that give it high quality. So it might be like high returns on equity. It might be high returns on capital. In this case, the QOL ETF is a global ETF that invests in around 300 companies.
Low debt,
high return on equity and stable profits, which would be the sign of a quality business. And so there is another ETF, QLTY, from BetaShares that came out recently, which is probably the BetaShares equivalent, which is slightly lower price, but only has 150 companies. All this is to say that I think the QOL ETF is quite a good ETF. And I think you can use it as a core or as a tactical holding if you have a view on the quality factor, which would be quite technical if you did.
Yeah.
Because it has 300 companies. Apple was one of the biggest holdings, for example. I think it's quite a good ETF.
Yeah, I've met the guys from VanEck before, and they talked about how their quality factor had outperformed a lot of quality seeking active managers, but at half the cost. That's what they were talking about. But it really depends on the environment, as you were saying.
Yeah.
And quality, so consistent earnings, stable, low debt, generally it ends up being healthcare, technology, consumer staples like Woolworths, and they tend to outperform in a recessionary or a lower growth environment. Not one where bond yields are falling, not one where the economy is doing incredibly well. So it kind of depends what environment you expect in the next 12 to 18 months.
So here's a summary of bivariate analysis of the MSCI quality and sector indices in different economic cycles, which basically means they just test the performance versus risk and return. And so they say you would expect strong outperformance from the quality factor when there's falling inflation, slowing growth, or rising inflation and slowing growth. So those are the two things. Whereas if you think about when it probably wouldn't do that well, it's when there's rising growth,
yeah,
basically.
Because all the cyclicals.
Yeah, you've got your energy companies, those companies that use leverage, the things that can cash in, coal stocks, that sort of stuff. Maybe coal eventually flips over, but that's the...
So coal in quality?
Well, if you look at, say, like Whitehaven, if you were... Okay, there's a few eyes over there. No, but if you think about Whitehaven for a second, sir...
How many UDLs?
None. So if you think about Qual and the way it builds a portfolio, high returns on equity, stable profits, and low debt.
Yeah.
Or low leverage, right?
They're paying back all their debt.
Exactly. They're paying back all their debt. They've got bigger profits, high returns on equity. So a coal stock could eventually fall into the quality factor. And so that's the type of stuff that tends to happen on the back end of this quality cycle. So you could end up with those things in there, and then they become not very high quality when they exit.
Yeah.
I think for the most part, you could use this ETF as a core. The one hesitation I have with it is that, to Drew's point, you can just put it right beside an active manager who invests in quality companies over 5 years and say, well, what have you done compared to this? But what I would say is that I think it's 40 basis points is the fee load. So if you want an ultra low cost fee load, it's probably still a bit meaty for a core.
Yeah.
If you're truly passive, when you can get S&P 500 for 5.
And 2/3 of that's quality.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to get... Yeah, that's another really
Microsoft,
good
Apple.
Yep.
All these companies are rated high quality.
Yeah. So just to give you a summary of the top holdings as at the 31st of October, you've got Apple, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, United Healthcare, Visa, Nvidia, Alphabet, MasterCard. They'll all be in the S&P 500.
Yeah.
So you're going to have overlap. You can stick that into the Morningstar X-ray if you've got access to that, or you can stick it into the Vanguard Fund Compare website and they'll show you the overlap there. So you don't want to be, you'll end up with so much quality if you try and stick them all together.
Yeah.
Or no quality at all because they just blend each other out.
It's more if you, maybe you've already got a full portfolio built like a FANG and you're tactical. So FANG is going to be your growth.
Yep.
This could be your quality, and you might have a value factor that you're pulling different environments rather than changing your core.
Yep. I like it. Risk Jeeves. This is the final question. It says, gents, if you were given the chance to own or become part of a board of directors of two ASX-listed companies, which would you pick and why? Don't say Zip. Unless you do say... No, they didn't say that.
I think I'm in trouble for my first tweet in 7 years. Can I get verified now?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, $8. Now you pay. Pay $8. Do you want to go I go, you go? So there's...
Am I going to pick yours?
Yeah, you try and guess what I'm going to say.
Dubber.
Turn around. Well, you get paid well. So cut that. For me, it would probably... Like, I would probably say Pro Medicus because it's such...
I was actually going to pick Pro Medicus, but
really?
as if you're ever going to get Sam out.
No.
You're you can work with direct. Sam.
Yeah, right, I just want right, to see them operate.
All right.
Oh, by the way, Sam, sorry, Sam. Wonderful. It also listens to the show. Fantastic. Sam is going to come and be interviewed by me live on stage at the RASC event.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's going to be a real treat to have him there. So thanks for coming down, mate. I would, because I just want to see how they operate. And I want to learn how do they make this incredible business. That's basically it. So that's my one. But I'm trying to think what you would go with. I feel like
you're not going to pick mine.
I feel like you're going to say something like, it's not boring, but it kind of is.
Both boring.
Are we saying ASX? Does it have to be? No, not the ASX company. Oh. Oh, did I just get that?
You got it. Yeah, yeah.
No, I was going to say on the ASX, but the ASX, you would really? You would be on the board of the ASX itself.
Yeah, well, I'll have to. I have to admit, I don't know much outside the ASX 300. So as soon as we left there, I kind of went, like, there's a barbecue company might be interesting, or a coat hangers, or and I kind of lost me. I just thought, you look at the ASX and you look at what's happening in finance, in crypto, in all this, surely the ASX can come up with a solution that solves the cost of investing, the platform costs, all these other costs, and just makes this seamless experience. Chess system, I thought it'd be super interesting. Surely this should be a fastest growing tech company.
Yeah.
Surely. They've can't even launch their blockchain settlement or block ledger, yeah, distributed ledger settlement. But it just seems like there's so much opportunity there.
Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't expect you to say that. But I guess a finance guy, you probably would.
I didn't want to be go to a fund manager or something. That was too boring.
Yeah, there are so many... don't say that too loud. So there are so many...
I know, too much.
...interesting businesses on the ASX. And I would favour just working, like being a fly on the wall at some of these discussions.
You're not going to pick my second one.
I don't know what your second one is. So I'm just... Wait, so I'll guess your second one.
I'll guess yours.
Okay, go.
I actually already saw it.
Oh, you did?
I've forgotten it already, though.
Do you remember?
Telstra.
No. Sure. I'd rather not. No, my second one.
You retire from the
this
board.
I feel like this is going to surprise people. Now, I've got to admit, my third option was Soul Pattinson, Washington Soul Pattinson, just to think like the Milners do and like be in that environment, like that would be very special. But in terms of operating businesses, the business that I'd want to be inside of is actually Cochlear.
Yeah.
I just think it's an incredible business. I think it's, for decades, has been an incredible business. And
how you protect that position and grow.
And grow. While there, you got to deal with insurers, you've got to deal R&D. With regulation. R&D, even connecting your Cochlear device to your iPhone.
Yeah.
They've got to be aware of what Apple's doing. They've got to be aware of all these businesses and try and also navigate the legal landscape if you know Cochlear's history. So, you know, I think that would be a fantastic business. And there are many others, it sounds boring, but Wesfarmers would be really interesting too.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I'm going to guess.
You would not expect this at all. And it's technically, it's probably not part of the ASX company, but it's part of. That might help.
Block?
No.
ResMed? I'm trying to think.
So it's an ASX listed company, but it's a division within that ASX listed company.
A division within that ASX listed company. Someone's probably screaming through their headphones right now, like, this is what it is. Division? I'm not good at trivia.
I think green.
Hydrogen. FFI, Future Industries or whatever it is.
Yeah.
From Fortescue. Really?
Huh. I don't know why. It just seems whether it's deliverable or not, the stuff he's doing, you know, there was an article this week about how the iron ore billionaires are one of the biggest polluters in the history of the world.
Yeah.
With their businesses. But what is being announced and whether it comes to fruition or not is just super, super interesting in Fortescue Future, you know, the green hydrogen, soul, all this kind of complete changing the energy grid, you know, trying to green every part of their process and hopefully doing it legitimately, if it's achievable and true. It's you know, exceptional idea. So being part of, it's almost like a startup within a long-held billion-dollar business.
Cashed up. Yeah, business. okay, so that's the last question. Now, Risk Jeeves, that was brilliant, actually. It got us really thinking. I'd love everyone to tell us what you think. Like, what would you want to be part of? I think those are brilliant. If you do want to hear more about Sam Hupert and what Prometicus has built, he'll be coming to the event. And you can also live stream the event on the RAS YouTube channel. It may also be available on the SelfWealth YouTube channel and maybe even a few of our other partners. So you may be able to tune in to the RASC event live, even if you're not in Melbourne, and you'll still be able to ask your questions. So I've actually got a few extra things here, maybe, Drew, and you can just give me a word which sums up what has happened to this thing. So let's start off with one that
obscenity, all right?
No.
Preferably not.
Don't have to put the E on the podcast when I upload it. So the first one is Disney.
what's the Family Feud sound? Ba-bum.
Ba-bum. Yeah.
So I love Disney, hold the shares. They actually, this was kind of strange. No, that's not a single answer. Oh, that was a single answer. That's fine.
Is that all one word, is it? Okay.
They just reported like the best annual growth since 1996, but the share price fell 10%. I think they've just had an exceptionally strong couple of years and expectations have kind of got a bit too far ahead. Yep. And, you know, similar to everyone else, almost like Block buying Afterpay, Netflix struggling on valuation concerns. Well, the streaming business costs a lot of money, cannibalized their own business, and it was great during the pandemic, but now everyone wants cash flow and they don't have the cash flow, so being sold off.
Fair enough. What would you say if you could describe what happened with FTX, the crypto platform, this week? If you gave it a score out of interesting or...
I say not shocked.
Not shocked, yeah. Two words, it works.
Without being negative, it just seems... I think there's more regulation is needed in crypto. Not against, not for, not neither way on it. It just... there just seems to be a lot of moving parts and not a lot of checks and balances in things like exchanges.
The crazy thing is we all call for
and then it comes
regulation, and then everyone's like, but it's, you know, it's not regulated, that's what's so good about it. And everyone's like, yeah, well, do you want the regulation or not? Because normally the bank would, like a central bank would step in and save it in exchange.
Yeah,
like
that's what we're talking about, wasn't it, over the pizza.
Yeah, and it's not. So that's the risk that you run, unfortunately.
And it kind of sets back what were probably potentially good assets and, you know, platforms for 5 or 10 years. And my other concern is that if this was your kind of first experience in investing going into crypto, well, it might put people off or slow them down for the next 5, 10 years, where you want the complete opposite.
And this is the thing, this is the case that was made by Tom Richardson, my old colleague in AFR. He said, at least if something goes, you know, bust, you own the assets of the business. Whereas in these types of things, if they go bust, it vanishes from digital air. So, if you do, to Drew's point, if you have invested in some of these crypto assets, like you're going to get, the social media is a bit of a toxic environment, but the thing to remember is that this is not investing. This is not indicative of investing.
Yeah, it's not the typical experience.
No. So we've been doing this a long time and you get bad experiences. Like we've got a few names which shall not be named, but have been named in this podcast so far. And we don't talk about them that much, but they're a bit of fun. You can laugh about them, but that doesn't happen that often. For the most part, if you invest in a diversified portfolio for the long term, that is the single best way to grow wealthy. And over 150 years of history will back that up. So not indicative. It's hard, hard lesson. I don't trust any of those platforms. Personally,
yeah.
I have my tiny little NFT through OpenSea, and you can transfer it anywhere at any time because it's non-custodial, which makes sense for me. So that's my little thing there. Drew says, don't forget, never been a better time to invest. Drew, mate, this is heaps of fun. If you have any questions, please send them through to the Ask a Question link, which is everywhere on the RAS website. It's in the menu. It will also be in your podcast player or in the show notes wherever you get this. So, Drew, thanks for taking the time to join me this week. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you next week.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies. Which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high-growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high-growth strategy focuses on longer-term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if. You want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that. But one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian property podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of Rask Core, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this. This is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax.
I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nevexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All RASC users get 20% off an annual plan with Nevexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nevexa's software and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nevexa, but they do create some great tools which the RASC community uses each and every day. Number 8, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number 9, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the RASC YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the RASC network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the RASC Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we're on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. RASC Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the RASC Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000 and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support RASC and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the RASC network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.